Blog Talk Radio. Served always to distract the public councils and enfeeble the public administration. Not having political parties was a good idea, in theory. In reality, it didn't work. Washington's successors created America's first political parties. Other countries, like England or France, have multiple parties. But America has pretty much always had two major parties, currently the Democrats and the Republicans. But don't be deceived. There are actually dozens of third parties alive and well here in the United States, like the Libertarians, the Green Party, the Transhumanist Party, the United States Pirate Party, and even the American Shopping Party. While you may not have heard of them, a vote for them could have a huge impact. If a third party candidate can get just 5% of the vote, their party can be eligible for federal election funds and just maybe shake things up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show. We thank you for joining us. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
Hi. Good evening, everyone. This is Laurie Picka from the great state of Michigan. I hope everyone is doing well tonight.
I don't know what weather is like your neck of the woods in America, but geez, man, it was 15 degrees lower than it was yesterday. It was freezing, man. Yeah,
we're expecting,
you know, a lot of snow and everything. So keep warm, everybody out there. It's going to be dreadful. So tonight, season 6, episode 15, the role of activism in making political change, with a whopping 44% of the public either independent or labeling themselves as NPA, which means no political affiliation. There's definitely a growing enthusiasm gap when it comes on to America political discourse. Why is that? Why the indifference? Is it that people genuinely don't care or are disillusioned by anything and everything political? Change is inevitable as every culture thrives on it with a renewed sense of optimism. We saw it with Barack Obama when he ran for president in 2008. Will a two-party stranglehold both parties ever be relinquished anytime soon? The current system doesn't cater to third parties, but with the growing disdain, can a third party break the norm? How important is political activism to you personally? Tell us your story, friends, on how activism helped change your community for the better. Thanks for joining us tonight. You can call in at 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling from. Don't speak over us as the host, nor anyone who may be online. Failure to do so means immediate termination of your call. Remember to visit our website, www.kitchenpolitics123.com. This is Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show. We're not anti-social, just anti-stupid. Let's get cooking. Okay, we'll have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 calls lined up and everything. So you want to take the calls immediately, or should we talk about what is a role, you know, the role of activism in politics?
I guess we can talk for a minute or so about activism in politics, because I truly believe that activism plays a huge part in politics. It can sway, you know, the votes one way or another, or to one politician or to another politician. It can act. It is powerful, especially if it is something that everyone is very passionate about. So activism is important for a ton of reasons, and we can go through them as we go along. But they need to be involved. They need to know who is running for what office and for what reason. And if we want to continue on a path of democracy, we need more activists. We need more people engaged. That's what our
Indeed, I agree 110% on everything. And listen, if you think politics don't affect you directly or indirectly, then you're sadly mistaken, because when we don't vote and a minute percentage gets power, like we've seen what's happening with the Republican Party, they're all bark and no bite, then you see what damage that can be done and everything. So politics do directly and indirectly, you know, affect your life, you know. And I get with the enthusiasm gap, you may have Trump versus Biden again. And according to the polls, which, you know, it's a toss-up if you can believe them or not, you know, people don't want to say Biden versus Trump anymore. They're sick of that, you know. So, you know, why the indifference? And people generally don't care, or are they disillusioned by everything political? So, you know, hopefully we can get some perspective on that from our first caller from Central Michigan, 989 area code. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123, caller. What's cooking? Yes, you're online.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the show. What's cooking? Okay, I guess the person would rather listen. They're being shy and everything. I put them on hold a little bit. North Central Michigan, 810 area code. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. What's cooking?
This is Doris Suchu. I'm on an 810 area code, but I'm calling from my home phone. I don't know the number, but maybe that's me.
Oh, okay.
How are you?
Yes.
Fine, thanks. I'm glad you reminded me tonight. Well, the first thing you said about politics is I used to feel that way, like politics. I'm not involved in that messy stuff. You know, I was a teacher and I wasn't involved in the union that I was in. And I was social worker, I wasn't involved. And I came to the point where I realized that, and I tell this to other people because I know more now. When they say, well, I'm not involved in politics, they say, you're not actively involved in politics, but politics is involved in you. And you make a difference. You're either leaning over and they're doing it to you, or you decide that you got to get involved because something didn't hit you right, that you know, really affects you. So I tell them they're all involved in politics, passively or actively. And then I myself got involved. Maybe not like I did get involved with the parties and so on, but I found when there's something that I got involved with on my own regarding a condition in Flint, like the police and domestic violence victims and all that. I wasn't in any organization except on my own, and I got more done that way because nobody taking a vote on it, you know. And you can get involved that way at the very least, as well as with other organizations when you see something that you can work with. And I think it's critical to get something done in the political arena that we're dealing with.
So Darcy, quick question. You know, what drove you to political, you know, to jump into politics, you know? What was that eureka moment?
I'll tell you what that was. It was like I didn't plan any of it. I was a physician in private practice, and in 1984, my office manager brought me a victim, a young woman, and she looked like a raccoon because she had two black eyes. And I said, let's see, what do I do? Maybe I need to get a head x-ray, because I wasn't really involved. But in addition to that, I called up the local shelter, and said, not everybody, most of them don't want to go to a shelter, but there are shelters when they need them. And I said, I have a girl, she looks like a raccoon, she's been beat up, and I can you, you know, can she come and see you? And they said, oh, yes, send her down, we'll look for her. The next day, my office manager came in. I said, well, what happened with Patty? And she said, oh, she went down there, and then she went home, and she waited around, and they were talking about their weekends and something coming up, and here she is sitting looking like a raccoon. And I told her she was coming, and I was so outraged when I heard that. I said, what?
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up going down and talking to someone at the shelter, not aggressively, but that's how I got started. And then I started seeing what they do or don't do. And then the other thing is working with the victims. The police reacted in different ways and didn't have a standard way. And as I got looking into that, as you get involved, you learn a whole lot. They had no written policy. And I remember saying, after getting involved, they had a written policy on when you pull a firearm, because that happened in the 70s when a little 15-year-old black boy was running away with the television set, and the police officer shot him in the back and killed him. Then they developed a policy. So they didn't have a policy on domestic violence, their most common call, but not their most dangerous, which they used to say, but that's not backed up. It's not their most dangerous call. And when they say, well, doctor, we have an unwritten policy on it, and I would say, do you have an unwritten policy on the firearms, blah, blah, blah. So ultimately, I'll just say, when you stick around, go back, your rubber ball. They finally all developed the same policy in the county on domestic violence. So that was not an organization. It was on my own. You get involved because something hits you. And the other thing that happened, when I was a resident in my training, medical training, at the hospital, there were some concerns, and it wasn't about money. A lot of things are about money, unions. And I had said I never got involved in unions, but with the homeless sit-down strike. But on that time, I ended up trying to get some things done at the hospital with our group of doctors, particularly internists, and got a little organization going, and we made a suggestion to one of the lower-level administrators about we'd like to do this, like take $5 out and put it in an account for just us as an organization. And the guy said, well, I'll get back with you. And it wasn't a union. It was just an organization so that we could, you know, pay for minor things when we get together. I had to chase him down the hall and say, John, what happened in that meeting? And he said, they don't think that's a good idea. I said, what do you mean they don't think it's a good idea? We think it's a great idea. It's disappointing. And they say, they don't have any money on or any place on the computer to put you. You know, they have all the unions, they have all this, but there's no place on the computer to put you, which didn't make sense. And he says, and besides, you're not a union. And I said, what did you say? He said, you're not a union. Okay, that was my clue there. So I organized the union. Didn't know anything about it, but you get involved, and it passed. And it didn't pay any money more because it wasn't for money. It was about patient care and other issues. So if something hits you wrong, I found out, you do get involved. You can make a difference without even an organization. Yep. You organize people together. And that's how I got involved.
Good. That's good. That's a good story because, you know, with unity in numbers, that's when you can get things done. Look at the lobbyists on Capitol Hill. They have billions of dollars, and they're organized and everything. And it don't take much. Yep. 30 people or more. You know, get a petition going online, because online is a new thing now, you know, and just start working from the grassroots. Because when we look back at Barack Obama, before he went into politics, he was a community organizer, and thousands of people he gathered up and start talking about the issues that affect them in inner city youth and women's rights and gay rights and immigration rights and all that. And then that's how an organization can make a name for themselves and get, you know, media attention and what have you, Black Lives Matter, you know, whichever group, you know, and it's not necessarily political, but, you know, like you said, women's organization for battered women, different things, you know. So I'm glad that you got involved in everything, and more people like you will get involved, you know, because politicians need to listen and learn from their constituents, the people who vote for them and everything. And that's the only way we can make change.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, back in the day when I was growing up, I was just a young girl, I had a great aunt and uncle. And I think back on this now because it's probably where I got my my love for not just politics, but just social issues. And it was because they would come over every single week. It usually was like on a Tuesday. And they would sit and talk to my parents, and they would talk about everything that was going on in the world, politics, cars, unions. I mean, you name it, through the years they talked about it. And I would just sit and listen, and I was like a sponge, and I took it in. So from there, I just continued doing different things and being in different, different rallies and all kinds of things. With Governor Schneider, tried to get rid of him for two summers. I mean, the list goes on. But, and also, yes, battered women, I was part of that. We had a place downtown Mount Clemens that we would bring things, you know, clothes and things to, you know, that were needed for those women. And then there was a homeless shelter that was not far, and we would do dinners, you know, for the homeless. And so, yeah, I think what you have to do is get a taste of what it's like to see, have someone smile at you, you know, when you're handing them a plate of food and say thank you. And from that, it just grabs your heart and it makes you want to do more. That's what it did for me. Mm-hmm. So I applaud anyone that's out there and trying to make a difference. Because even if you just help one person, that is something. Just one person is all it takes. And then, you know, that person can help someone. And, you know, that's how it goes on. So it's
can
wonderful.
I add something? Can I
sure.
add something to
yes.
you said that?
Sure.
Another thing that you made me think of is it's not just when you do that. I learned years later after, you don't know what happens with everybody, whether it's a teacher or social worker, whatever, you sometimes find out, and you don't know about your impact. But I remember we had a water crisis here, you know, in Flint area.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the phone with a friend who called this woman up, and I had seen her on Facebook, and I said, you know, you ought to get a trophy, because she was just a citizen that was, you know, working, getting involved in that water crisis. And a friend hooked her up on the phone, and I told her my name. Or she says, what's your last name? And I told her my last name, and she said, you helped me back a while with my three daughters, my three young daughters, and I was in a violent
mm-hmm.
situation. And my daughters are, and she got out of that. And my daughters are grown up. One's going to law school, and she was the one who got in the activism of the water crisis. And they learn
mm-hmm.
when you do that,
mm-hmm.
too, to carry that on.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them do. And you may mm-hmm. never know it, but I found out that she had done that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, ladies, we'll have other callers. Oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Nothing. I was going to say that just makes you feel well, really good, and you just want to do it for another person, and it just continues
mm-hmm.
on. And it's a wonderful
mm-hmm.
feeling. And you mentioned Flint. That was another thing that we did. You know, went up to Flint, did some organizing, and, you know, did a Christmas party. And, you know, did it really help? A little bit. You know, some kids were happy for Christmas. So, let's take the other, David.
Yes, you know, how do you think social media is shaping our political future? Is it muddying the waters, or is it helping the populace to, like, gain information on different political issues? Do you think it's shaping the political future of America in a good way or a bad way or a mixture?
Did you say social media? Yeah, social media.
Yes, social media, like the Twitters and Facebooks and what have you.
It just depends, David. I would say Twitter is probably for the worst, because it's very racist. There really are no guardrails on Twitter anymore. And TikTok is, it used to be, I don't know if it still is, but mainly young people like Gen Zers. So that, you know, that's okay so far.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, Facebook, as far as I'm concerned,
there's a lot that goes on Facebook that goes unchecked. And the things that shouldn't go unchecked, go, you know, get checked. So I guess it's just part of the whole thing. You know, social media can be, you know, a help, but it also can be a hindrance. So it's, got to pay attention.
Yeah. Elaine calling from Michigan. Hello, Elaine. What's cooking tonight?
Good evening, boy.
Hi, Elaine.
Very great call. I'm glad somebody else is calling in. How is everybody tonight? Okay, I hope. Well, getting involved is very rewarding, and you had asked about social media. Social media swings both ways. The pendulum swings too far in both directions. I think we should go back to some of the older things are proven, and I think that we ought to start thinking about them again. I remember doing term papers. You would get a failing grade if you didn't prove all your points. You had to prove them. You had to prove them to be fact. There's things on social media that are so bizarre, so wrong, so damaging, they can destroy somebody, and yet it goes unchecked. That's wrong. That is wrong. The other thing about getting involved, I want people to remember you get your candidate elected one vote at a time. You keep in perspective that everybody you talk to is one more vote. If you keep that idea in your head, after you've talked to 100 people, that one more vote grows to 100. That's what activism is. One vote at a time. One clean, clear, truthful vote at a time.
You know,
can
and
I say something in response to that when you're done? Because she brings
go ahead.
Well,
go ahead,
about
George.
One vote at a time. I think she's exactly right about that. Just because this just happened, I have a friend who's Palestinian, and he sent out a number of things, and he sent out this post, and what it was like the handwriting, and that's dealing with the cause, but it doesn't matter what the cause is. What it said is, but I'm only one person. What can I do? Said 7 billion people.
Yes.
7 billion people.
I
thought that was quite good in there. I saw a form of that where it had, you know, where you have a group of people, it's just shadows of there's this many here and there's this group over here. And those are like Republicans and Democrats, but there's the two groups involved. And in the middle is three times as many of them that they say, but my vote won't matter. And that's what reminded me
of. I hear that every day. And I don't know why people don't understand that their vote matters. Your vote matters.
Yes.
Truly does. Your
indeed.
Vote can be, you know, between a Democrat and a Republican. You know, your candidate or the candidate you didn't want. Your vote matters, always.
I agree that social media does help politicians to be more relatable, but social media also helps them alter the way we see things. We only see what we want to see. And just like filters and certain angles that make you look better in a picture, there is no way to know what you're seeing or hearing on social media is actually real. Because, for example, you have QAnon out there, and I have a lot of stuff out there which is garbage, but people just eat it up, you know? And then we'll have something like, I don't know, Facebook with different groups and everything. And it's always good to interact with people to see their different perspectives. You may have a fresh perspective listening to somebody else's perspective, you know, and a dialogue get going and everything. How do we translate the 44% independent or no party affiliation voters to actually getting into the process? Because, you know, with third party candidates like Jill Stein from the Green Party and whichever RFK Jr. running as an independent, you know, do you think, you know, that can hurt or help Joe Biden more?
Hurt. I think it can hurt.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. It's all right. It's okay. Thank
you. Oh, you're saying... You're saying it would hurt Joe Biden more if RFK and Joe Stein would be in the race and everything?
Yeah, I think that it could. Absolutely. You know,
mm-hmm.
The thing is that I wouldn't mind having a third party, but because I think people right now are so tired of the Republican Party and they feel like the Democratic Party is shoved down their throat because they see how horrible the Republican Party has become. Just think if there was a third party, we could, and the third party and the Democrats could sort of, come together in a way that would maybe make someone that's a little more in the middle instead of so far right. Maybe we could have, a balance. It might not be a bad thing down the road. Right now, it's not a possibility. Just not. It's the system is innate, just like you said, David.
I'm going to jump in again, if you don't mind.
Right. No,
a third party will not work until we get rid of the Electoral College.
Well,
a third party it doesn't stand a chance. All it ends up is making a mess. It makes it a muck mess. If we got rid of the Electoral College, then a third party could stand a chance to be a winner.
Yeah.
But
and we can get rid of the
Republican. Third party does is it mucks up the results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should count.
I have another question. How does the 24-hour news cycle and social media threaten democracy? Because we have Fox News who... muddy the waters and make things up, while somebody like MSNBC or C-SPAN is totally neutral, that give a clearer vision of what's going on. Do you think with the revitalization of what Reagan got rid of when he came in 1981, the first thing he did?
Oh, the doctrine. The fairness doctrine.
Do you think that should be brought back?
I don't know why anyone hasn't tried to do that. I don't know. Seems like if it worked then, because you couldn't be, news didn't make money, entertainment did, and when he did away with that, most people don't even know about that you can say things and lie and so on, but that wasn't how it was when you had the fairness doctrine. And that's, I don't know why there's been no effort to do that. And a lot of people really don't know what's true, like you said. But you do have to do research, and a lot of people don't do that or know that or didn't write term papers that had to prove things, But just today I looked up, my friend sent me something about Portland, Oregon, and it was a Christmas tree lighting that just happened a couple weeks ago. And there was the woman who's a reporter for Portland, Oregon, and what it said in there, what the person that sent said that the woman wasn't covering what was really going on down there, which was it wasn't just the Christmas tree lighting. Many nonviolent protesters and having signs about Gaza were there, protesting or whatever. There was no violence. And I thought, well, I'm going to look this up. And I looked it up, and that was the woman who reports for the Portland, Oregon. And when she was asked, looking out a window where the tree was lit, she was saying, someone says, is there protesting there? And she said, it's a Christmas party. They're all singing Christmas carols down there. And that's what she said. And I said, and I looked it up, and I found the tree thing had protesters with signs. And the reporter there was not reporting back. She said that they were Christmas carols. So the media, different depends on who the media person is. Some are more timid and go along, and like Ali Balshi and some of these other people, they kind of speak right out. I have a lot of respect for the old Cronkite. I have respect for them. They speak up. But
I looked it up, but most people aren't going to do that. That is not what was going on down there, Christmas carols. There was a protest.
No.
It was not violent, and this particular one didn't report it, and perhaps someone above, depending on how their leaning are, didn't want that to be covered. So in that news report, it didn't cover that there was a protest at the Christmas tree lighting.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
trouble with having false media, now we know that Alex Jones has to pay a horrendous amount of money for his false media, and so does
mm-hmm.
Faux Fox, which are licensed entertainment. The problem is that once propaganda takes hold, it takes years
yep.
to undo the lies. There's a saying that while truth is first putting its shoes on, the lie is going around the world.
Right.
Now, I mean, we have got to get the fairness doctrine back, period. And this
yep.
false news has got to stop, period.
Mm-hmm.
There has
so
been
yeah.
so
why
much
it
out there. There has been so much out there that have hurt people for no reason at all. I ran across
mm-hmm.
a post that was mocking and making Joe out to be senile. And what they
yeah.
what the tape was doing is it took a speech, and each time he was correcting his stuttering, they cut that little part out and spliced
mm-hmm.
it together and made it sound
mm-hmm.
like he was mumbling for over a minute and a half. That's wrong.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
very wrong.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Taken down. Oh, just
mm-hmm.
Just one a little tidbit. Talking about the Electoral College, I looked it up. How many attempts have been made to remove the Electoral College? And it says since 1800, over 700 proposals to reform or eliminate the system have been introduced in Congress. And as we know, those 700 proposals have gone nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
And
wondering who did both Republicans, Democrats vote against? I mean, you know, that's another whole deep depth of it. Who was voting against it? Because as I understand, several of the last Republican presidents, except for the 2004 election, the number of presidents got elected who did not get the majority of the vote, and that is a problem.
Yep. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show with David Franklin and Laura Pickham. When you call
mm-hmm.
in, say first name, where you're calling from. The number to call in is 515-605-9802. We'll have a call from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, the 989 error code. Hello, caller.
Mm-hmm.
I see that you're a first-time caller. You know, welcome to the show. Do you have anything to add to this this discussion? Okay, I guess the person's being shy. Khalil, calling
okay.
from the Commonwealth of Virginia. Hello. Okay, nobody's talking. I don't know why. I don't know what's happening tonight. Everybody's shy,
yeah.
I guess. Oh, yeah.
Well, Khalil, how are we? As usual.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Okay, so back in 1961, there was this movement in America where young people, that changed the course of American history, and it was for those of us who were taught American history, it is easy to assume that equality and justice were inevitable, and that the arc of moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. That's what Martin Luther King said once, and you know, during the 1857 address on West Indian emancipation in New York, famed abolitionist Frederick Douglass said that in his own speech, quote, power concedes nothing without a demand.
Mm-hmm.
It never did, and it never will. Yes,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, this was a statement that black Americans have intimately understood both then and now, given their battles against horrific nature of American chattel slavery, Jim Crow, apartheid laws, mass incarceration, and a resurgence of voter suppression laws. They have to pressure unwillingly and often hostile white leaders and lawmakers to enforce their freedoms. So with the advent of social media, do you think politicians are getting to know their constituents? And do you think that social media plays a big part in how the political discourse goes in America? You know, how does the social media networks really activate people? Because not since Barack Obama in 2008, you know, that was like the first presidential campaign basically to mobilize people. The question is really, do you think Republicans, you know, with their spin machine, they're so good at it, lying and everything, do you think that, you know, they have a chance of regaining Congress and even the White House with their disinformation, you know?
I don't think so at this point. People are starting to wake up. But let's go back to Barack Obama first, because Barack Obama actually, like you said, he's a community organizer. And, you know, he was, you know, an activist. And you saw, I mean, we saw in real time what he created. He got people so enthused, and he got people so excited, and he got people wanting to get involved. It was an amazing time. I remember his speeches where I would just hang there and just listen to the speeches because they were so powerful, and you know, his the way he spoke was just, you just wanted to listen and never stop hearing him speak. And then he came in his hope and change, and the hope and change is something that people could grab onto, because at that time that's what we want. We wanted hope and we needed change, and he took those two words. He became president not once, but twice. And that's what we need now. This is what I see right now. I see that this country needs something to hold on to. You know, the Democrats are trying to show, you know, their campaign, they're trying to show the difference between Republicans and Democrats, but they don't have a slogan that, like, hope and change. The people, when they hear it, say, "Oh yes, that's you know, that's the Democrats. You know, that's what they're going to do for our country." You know, so we need some powerful, small, just a little, maybe 3-word thing. I know they had Bidenomics. Bidenomics did not work. It just didn't work, because the Republican Party, what they did was, they have been saying all along that inflation is bad, we're not in recovery. You know, they're going against the Bidenomics when, if you look at the numbers, which these people don't look at numbers, they think that, you know, the Bidenomics is not working, but it is working. So we need something, and I hope that whoever's on the line right now, think of some sort of a phrase that we can come up with that would give people excitement when they think of, you know, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Just something, you know, excited about, so that, you know, it's not like,
I have something that stands out. Better has come. You know, Carl, when you compare Joe Biden's, better has come.
Okay.
As a slogan, because when you compare Joe Biden, what he's done in 3, almost 4 years compared to what the orange monster, the orange idiot, the clown, the loser did in his 4 years. Joe Biden has done so much in that short time, you know, compared to FDR. And you can compare him to FDR, you know, who is a legend in politics, you know, the different programs, the CHIPS program, the infrastructure program. You know, the very the different programs that he has instituted and signed into law, you know, and Republicans, all they're on is, you know, getting rid of it, you know. And when people ask, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or independent, okay, you get rid of these programs that Joe Biden signed into law. You know, what is your plan? And Republicans often say, oh, okay, trust us, just elect us first, and you'll see. And people, some people still fall for that. You know, they're not good in details, the Republican Party.
Right.
You know, they just want to destroy and tear down and ridicule Bidenomics and things Democrats have done that are good in moving America forward. You know, and I ask anybody, you know, listen, were you off, are you off better off 4 years ago than you are today? My answer is yes, because 4 years ago, during a pandemic, we're putting people in morgues, you know, and makeshift morgues in trailer backs and everything. Donald Trump and Republicans did nothing in terms of helping people and encouraging people to get a COVID shot and everything. So that alone will say that Republicans are uncaring and unthoughtful and don't give a damn about America. They just care about power and having that power and bullying people with that power and everything, having different investigations that have nothing to do with putting, you know, food on the table or keeping a roof over your head. And all it did was tax cuts for the wealthy. The deficit shoot up to $7 trillion under Trump, and he gave the 1%, the richest 1%, $5 trillion in tax cuts. And what are their plans for 2024? Give more tax cuts to the wealthiest 1%. So that's not putting the majority of Americans first. That's just putting their interests first because, you know, when they're done with politics and everything, the rule is, okay, a lobbyist in front of you, you're looking at their thing that you have to legislate, and these same lobbyists are donating to these political campaigns through super PACs and everything. How's that, you know, helping the small man, the small business owner, you know, the working class family? It's not. You know,
it's
so
not.
People need to wake up. Even though they're waking up and everything, they need to wake up and say that Republicans don't care about them, they don't care about America, and they keep saying putting America first. That does not exist. It's just words that have no meaning. You know?
You know, there's something that I can, that you just made me think of. We just had a UAW strike here in Michigan and across the country, of course. And the president, Sean, his name was Sean Fain,
Sean
I believe.
Fine. Yeah, right.
Yeah. He was, in my eyes, amazing. That man, his speeches alone, his speeches were very uplifting. He, you know, he was forceful with what he had to say. But every time he came on, he had on a different t-shirt. And the one that really caught my eye is that when he had his t-shirt on that said, "Eat the rich." Eat the rich. And I thought that was like the best. That was the best. And I'll tell you what, though, you know, the UAW membership in Michigan, I don't know what happened. I know that, you know, they did settle and everything, but I just know from what I saw here is that these UAW members that were on strike, they were united. They were on a mission to get what they wanted, and they did. They got most of what they wanted, and it was different this time. This strike was different. This strike was because we had a man that was forceful. He was intelligent. He could speak, and he told them what he wanted. Told, you know, GM, Chrysler, and Ford, you know, what he wanted, and they got mainly what they wanted. I mean, not 100%, of course, but they got a lot of what they wanted. So I guess what I'm trying to say is it means a lot to be these UAW members that were striking together. They were all together in unity. If it was just a couple members trying to get a raise, they would have never gotten one in a trillion years. So in numbers, you can do more. And that's what you have to remember. In numbers, we can do more.
Hello, can you hear me? Can you hear
me? Yes, I can
you
hear you.
Okay, my name's Larry. I'm from Michigan. My phone's running out of battery. My phone's running out of battery.
Okay.
My phone is running out of battery. but I'm really enjoying this talk.
Do they do this every Sunday? Yeah, we're on every Sunday, yeah. Sunday, Monday, and Thursday.
Okay, I don't know if you're Laura Pika or whatever.
Yes, I am. That's me.
I found out about it on your Facebook post. I'll be here next week with the full charge.
We'll be on tomorrow night, too. Same time.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Thank you for calling. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Yes, ma'am.
Lori, it's Doris. I wanted to respond to something you said. In terms of being united, one thing, Sean Fine, and way back when the sit-down strike happened here in Flint, they were organized, and they were facing the National Guard with big guns aimed at the plant, and they put in gas or tear gas in the plant. And they faced things that were extremely dangerous, and they stuck it out, and they got it. But the thing is, when the leader speaks, I think Sean Fain and the really good leaders let you know things you didn't know. They educate you as they're talking about that, and you don't know that. That's happening because they don't keep up on it. One of the things that's pretty typical of what the Republicans, they're always trying to take away Social Security and try to say it comes out of our taxes, which
is a lie.
And that's a lie. Mm-hmm. And so that has to be refuted all the time. Social Security and Medicare, right, which is really a great thing to have that we didn't have before. And the point is, people just telling them, this isn't your taxes. This doesn't come out of your you don't taxes to on this. This comes out of what your work time did. You earned that. That's your money. Yeah. It isn't like a burden that they can get rid of. And they don't speak enough about that or repeat it. And the second thing is with Social Security, they say we're running out of money. The point is the poorest of the poor, up to maybe lower middle class income people, they pay 100% of every penny they earn into the Social Security, but you go above that, it may be $148,000. Now, really? We're running out of money? The higher you go up, the less those people even feel it. So it's not it's going to run out. We always raise it.
It's not.
And we've already hit the poorest of the poor. And that's important for them to know. It's not even more coming out of yours. But some of them don't work. Multi-billionaires may not work for a company, and they may not pay it at all because they're not in the category of an employee. So they don't even contribute. And so when you go up, you can go up to another $40,000 or just go up to $3 million, whatever. But a lot of people don't know that. It's like there's this fixed amount, and it's going to go out. And educating them that this really, it's there's so much more they could do, and the higher up they go, the less people even feel it.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what's funny is the working, the working man, the people that work should know, that they are paying into Social Security and Medicare. I mean, how can you not know? If you look at your check stub, if you look at it, it's all there. And you can see what you're paying in, and through the years, it does accumulate, and it adds up. And that's why there's trillions of dollars in the Social Security fund and the Medicare fund. Now, the thing is that the Republican Party, it isn't that they want to take it away. They want to privatize it. And what they want to do is invest our money into the stock market so they can make more money. That's what they want. And then if this all goes upside down, it's gone. Social Security went bankrupt. No, not happening. Mm-hmm. They cannot touch money that is not theirs. And that is something that people have to understand. They can't. It is not their money. They didn't work for it. It's not taxes. It's not taxes that we have put in for roads and stuff. It is for Social Security, and it's for Medicare. That's all it's for. Nothing else.
Yeah, but did you notice the propaganda word for Social Security is entitlement? Mm-hmm. And we have to correct somebody. We have to correct them. Every time they use that term entitlement, we have to correct them. And we have to correct the media. We have to correct the media when they repeat the word entitlement.
Right, and it means
the media sometimes has a tendency to be awful lazy.
Well, that's right. And you are entitled to it. You are entitled to it, but
yes, you are entitled
is a negative word.
Right, but you worked for it, right?
Right, the entitlement
yeah, but they
sort of
call
means
it entitlement.
They,
in other words, they're saying that it's welfare.
Correct.
I know.
But
you know, and the Republicans have changed the term welfare. Welfare meant for the good of the people.
Yeah.
They've changed that term. They changed that term during Reagan to mean the woman with the fur coat and the Cadillac picking up her check, which was a blatant lie.
Yep, right. That's true.
Or
very true.
Or the queen, the black woman queen that he presented that wasn't a real person. It's
right.
a stereotype, and it fits into a bias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're entitled to your paycheck. You're entitled to your money that's yours. But the word entitlement to mean something that doesn't apply to that in the sense that they use it.
Right.
Absolutely not. You know, that's how they
All right, ladies, check
this
out. So check this out now. Rick Scott, in the 2022 midterm elections, he put out a document saying that, you know, Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare should be sunset programs and everything to be renewed every 5 years. And he had the gall and the audacity to come on not only social media, but also the different medias, including Fox News, saying he didn't write that and everything. You know, so they want to get rid of Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid and everything. And like you said, they want to privatize it. But some Republicans out there, like Mike Lee from Utah, the U.S. Senator, he wants to gut it and get rid of it totally. You know, and it's unfair for the working man and woman who, since they're 16, 17 years old, been working and putting into the system each paycheck. Mm-hmm. You know, why don't they stop these unnecessary wars, like we had a $1 trillion war in Afghanistan, for example, and they use Social Security money to fund that war along with the war in Iraq? You know, we need to start holding positions like Rick Scott accountable. You know, for his nonsense and everything, his lies, you know.
And he's the guy who ran who was at running the big corporation that got the biggest fine for, Medicare, some medical related insurance fine, the biggest fine ever up to that time.
Yeah.
And then he was parachuted out of that. And so he looked like this. Just like the guy in Texas, the attorney general, he's got criminal charges that he gets out of. It's almost like if you can get in power, you can avoid justice, which is not the way it should be.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. As far as I'm concerned, Rick Scott should be in prison for what he did. That's that's what I think, you know.
Yeah. You know, when you're talking about, you know, the third party thing, the third party... The thing that is with our system, having a third party cuts into the other two the way that it is. If you had a system, a parliamentary system, you have to work together because you don't get enough votes to become a leader if you don't get enough of the groups for you. So they have to work together. In our system, the other side's working to tear everything down. One thing I think the Electoral College that someone mentioned, but also ranked choice voting allowed people to be equal when you go to vote for them, and they added up differently. That way, it's not a third party, but it's ranked choice, so you can pick your first, your second, your third, and you get closer to having possibilities of people who are not in this party or that party to be elected because we don't have the parliamentary system. That's not a problem with all the parties because if you get more of the people supporting you, then they work together because that's how you get to be the prime minister.
You know, in my opinion, I don't know why we can't just all vote. Whoever gets the most votes wins the election. And that's it. I mean, that's the simplest way to do it. It's the fairest way to do it. It's the most logical way, in my opinion. And so they need to get rid of it. They need to get rid of that Electoral College. They do.
Because the Electoral College is a racist system that impeded African Americans and women who didn't have property to vote.
Yep.
And that's been outlawed, or it should be outlawed, I should say. And
that system has been null and void, arguably since FDR's first term, because we didn't need that anymore. We should have gotten rid of it from then. You know, but, you know, this is America, and, you know, once you have the hegemony between Democrats and Republicans, then to hell with everybody else and to hell with every other idea. You know, you have to be a part of one or another. And that's why the 44% who are independent or no party affiliation, they have this saying that, oh, you know, it's basically two wings and the same bird. You have the neoliberals and you have the neocons, and all for the same objective. But, you know, the ideology is slightly different, you know? So we need to change the system, really.
I've been trying to find this fact out, and I haven't been able to, but I do remember one of the elections where the vote in California, in other words, the other side of the far east, far west coast, went down because the Electoral College had already been called. So the people, there's over, what, a four-hour difference? The people on the far west stayed home. And I have been trying to find out what election that was, and I guess I'm not putting the right things in the search bar. if anybody knows the answer, would you please call it in?
It was one of the
presidential elections that the West Coast votes went down. I mean, remarkably down, because the Electoral College was called.
Was it the Electoral College?
In other words, all the key states had, you know, the were in. The person had already won enough electoral votes to put them in. And I can't, you know, and I keep searching for it. I haven't found it yet, but I do remember that happening.
I actually don't remember. I thought there was a calling of the vote that was in the earlier places, like out west. If they call the final vote before the east is done, that may have an impact just on the vote itself, rather than waiting until, you know, it's pretty much done, which I think they do more now. But I don't know about the Electoral College.
Okay, what do you think about? Yeah, go ahead, Lori. I can ask afterwards. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what we're going to talk about some of the biggest social issues, social justice issues in 2023, and these actually go along with, you know, the election right now. If you think about it, let's talk. There, number one is climate change. That is something that the Democrats definitely, that's part of their platform. They believe in climate change, where the Republicans do not believe in climate change. If you listen to, you know, the Orange Monster last week or the week before, he said when he's elected, you know, it's going to be, he will be the, what did he say, dictator for one day, and then he's going to drill, baby, drill, you know.
Correct.
So obviously, he does. The Republican Party does not believe in climate change. And if you pay attention to the
They say it, whether they believe it or not, but they have a reason for saying it. If they know
it's because, well, Trump said it. It's to drill oil. What else is it for? You know, and no regulations.
Right, and you didn't know that the fake electors somehow came to see the light when they realized what big fines are going to have to pay, and they, and many of them acknowledged that it was that Biden did win. But then they tried to say they were tricked and all that. But the point is, when it comes to being hit over the head or a big fine, some of them came out, and it's good that they did. I don't know what's going to finish here in Michigan, but some of them admitted that. But they shouldn't be on the election committee either. They shouldn't be on election committee.
David, you can do the next one if you want. Crime.
Oh, yes. And something on climate change. Conservatives and Republican Party believe it's liberal hoax. They've been saying that mm-hmm. since 1992 until now. And on a list of mm-hmm. social work's great challenges, it might be surprising to see strengthen social responses to environmental changes as one of the top mm-hmm. objectives. So climate change tops most surveys as the most pressing social issue, justice issue, to address. Mm-hmm. And the effects can be seen all over the news, from flooding in Pakistan to wildfires in Canada, California. It might not seem mm-hmm. like a problem for scientists, mm-hmm. but climate change can put a strain on resources and impact the well-being of entire communities. And in reality, sure. addressing climate change and climate justice can positively affect many of the other issues on the list that we're going to name out now. And social workers have the network and skills to mobilize and educate others on its impact, mm-hmm. you know. But, yeah. you know, people can talk about climate change, yes, but do you think a more immediate threat is artificial intelligence? We can talk about that later on. It's something to think about. So the next thing on the list is crime. Mm-hmm. And despite mm-hmm. overall decrease in murder rates in the United States so far in 2023, some cities have seen an increase, including Washington, D.C., with a 13.5% increase, Cleveland, Ohio, with 33.8% increase, Dallas in Texas has a 5.5% increase, Kansas City, Missouri, 32.8%, and Nashville, Tennessee, 5.8% increase in murder rates. So mm-hmm. this has led to prophetic tough on crime rhetoric in many local, state, and federal elections, with political parties leaning into more policing and harsher sentencing, and defunding the police and forming other mental health and social work task force. So, you know, with the militarization of police and everything, do you think that this is necessary to militarize police to gain an upper hand on criminal activities and violent crimes, or do you think it's going overboard?
That's overboard, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. My opinion, that's overboard. I think that would just spill into more beatings, shootings, injustice, and,
mm-hmm.
More
murdering of minorities and youth. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Yes.
You mean the militarization being by why there are more crimes? Or I missed that one.
No. They're trying to justify it by saying that, you know, when you militarize the police, you know, they have an upper hand, a somewhat upper hand, in trying to control crime, you know?
No.
There's been officers, not military. That's a big difference right there. Peace officers. Maybe the crime has gone up because a lot of people are looking at what's been going on with the Republicans and all the things they've been getting away with.
Mm-hmm.
There might be some mental thought going, well, the politicians are doing it,
mm-hmm.
so why
mm-hmm.
can't I?
They mm-hmm. sure are doing it. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
But no, you can't.
statistics at you, but they don't tell you how many people get hurt from white collar
mm-hmm.
crimes, how many people
mm-hmm.
end up devastated, dying,
mm-hmm.
sick, because everything's been taken from them from white collar
mm-hmm.
crimes.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, we have a crime issue,
it is?
And it goes from the top to the bottom, from
mm-hmm.
the bottom to the top.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but ladies, don't you think that, you know, it's a broader societal problem that leads to crime? Politicians and police and social workers and everybody should try to come together to, combat crime, because a lot of people are poverty-stricken. Some places have high unemployment, especially in the minority
mm-hmm.
communities. There's inequality.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of redlining districts for buying houses, inequality
mm-hmm.
in same pay for same work. You have housing
mm-hmm.
issues, like I said. So social
mm-hmm.
work professionals are often at the heart of the rehabilitation service.
You
know, prison reform and reentry processing. When so, wait, can I make a point? You know, when somebody's incarcerated and they come out, they don't get a second chance. We should reform things like that. When a person's in prison, you know, they should get some sort of help in terms of, you know, how do I reassimilate in society. Khalil from the Commonwealth of Virginia, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good.
How are you, Khalil?
I'm on the phone. Basically, I agree with you guys about the military agents. Mom, I'm on the phone.
Yeah, go ahead, Khalil.
I mean, I agree with you about the militarization of law enforcement, but I also respect you guys. I respect people who want to that lean from one side or the other, not someone that that complains when law enforcement gets militarized, but then at the same time they want civilians to have whatever they want. You know, that's why I don't respect people like Alex Jones and Rand Paul and all the people like that, because if they, when they do that, when they allow civilians to have whatever they want, but they don't allow the police, you know, it makes it more dangerous. Because not only that, but it's the same thing with civilians. The civilians aren't soldiers either, but they don't apply it to them. They just apply it to the police. Alex Jones, Rand Paul, and all them. And I didn't knock what's her name, Kamala Harris for trying to take away the gun from militarized gun from the police, but I did mock Rand Paul because he's not trying to be fair about it. He just wants it away from law enforcement, even like SWAT and detectives, but he wants civilians to have whatever type of gun they want. Which that's not really, that puts both the police and the public in a dangerous spot. So it's like, I respect you.
So what are some of the things you think we can help some people, like get out of poverty, get a job, for example, when they come out of jail? You know, how can we help those people to reassimilate in society?
As an example, they have come together with all the agencies. They are working on on housing, on children, on children's making sure children aren't hungry. Hungry children don't learn. Hungry children act up. So if you feed the children a good lunch, and in many cases a breakfast and lunch, those are the only two meals that kids get in a poor area. And also, I am comparing this to what we're doing in Detroit. The police in Detroit have become firm but fair. Now, those are key words, firm but fair. They're not military. They're not out there busting heads. We don't need that, firm but fair. One of the problems that you do have, though, with somebody coming out of jail or coming out of prison, I think it's extremely unfair that our taxes pay for these institutions, and yet the person that comes out of incarceration, at least in Michigan, gets a bill for room and board. Now, how in the hell are they going to be able to get ahead if they're slapped with a bill? It's bad enough they've served 2, 3, 4, 7 years or whatever. And then they get a whopping bill to pay back. And if they don't pay it back, they put them back in jail or prison.
The system
is rigged for the rich, because the rich man can pay his bail and they stay out of jail.
Absolutely. You're right. What happens is, it's a revolving door. Think about it. What they should do, in my opinion, they should have social workers, you know, or people that are trained that can maybe talk to them a month or two before. And if they've had, you know, no problems in jail, in prison, and, you know, they've been model so-called prisoners, you know, maybe they should have someone in there that can talk to them about their skills. Maybe do they know how to cook, or do they, you know, what are their interests, so that when they leave there,
You know, they could actually maybe have a job to go to, but
mm-hmm.
see, they
mm-hmm.
leave there. They have no job, no home,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times. And then they have
mm-hmm.
no money, and you're right, Elaine, about the bill. So what happens is mm-hmm. it's a revolving door. You can only
mm-hmm.
stay for so long without having
yeah.
the things that you need in your life to keep you going. And that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
You end up back in prison.
I also think that after so many months probation that they have been given, if they meet their
mm-hmm.
probation obligations, that should not show up when somebody does a record check for a job.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of people out there are prejudiced. The minutes it comes up, they were in jail. They don't give a damn what it was for. It could be for
mm-hmm.
stealing a loaf of bread. They won't hire them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a felony does it, not misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
Khalil, you wanted to make a point?
Also, the jail system cannot make their minds up about disabilities or ages. Like, they'll say,
mm-hmm.
You're not old enough to drink, but you're old enough to go to jail. You're not able enough to get out for rest, even when the other prisoners are not there, but you're able enough to go to jail. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they do that, even especially with disabled people. They'll say a disabled person is well enough to go to jail, but when it comes to getting in the jail, they give them a
mm-hmm.
bunch of unfair treatments and they treat them differently. But it's
mm-hmm.
like they need to make up their mind. If they're going to give someone the same punishment, give them the same rights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
And added to that, Khalil, when people, not hardened criminals, but when people make a mistake and is a lesser offense, like, you know, sell a bag of weed or something, why is it that
mm-hmm.
The prison industrial complex have harsher laws for minorities compared to white people? And instead of reforming them in prison, like teaching them a skill, like to be a welder, to be a carpenter,
mm-hmm.
to be a mason,
yeah.
you said do that, and when they come out, they can somewhat depend on themselves to start a small business. Why? Because a prison industrial complex just care about making money. Like Elaine
yeah.
said, it's a revolving door, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a new slavery in 21st century America where people are incarcerated, and
mm-hmm.
it is just this revolving door, and the prison industrial complex making a whole, you know, whole host of money and everything. And guess who they give
mm-hmm.
in contributions to? Republicans, because Republicans genuinely don't care about Americans,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're a minority, especially if you're a woman,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're gay. And that is sick,
yeah.
and that is why they should not be elected in 2024. They are disgusting human beings. Okay, so
yeah.
moving on to number three on the list. Lori, go ahead.
The LGBTQIA+ rights. According
mm-hmm.
to the Human Rights Campaign, more than 300 anti-LGBTQIAS+ bills have been introduced in 37 states this year. This includes legislation regarding gender-affirming health care for people who are transgender, sports participation based on gender identity, teachers or curriculums that discuss sex and gender, and books that feature same-sex, non-binary, or transgender topics. The
mm-hmm.
National Association of Social Workers is pushing back against that legislation in various ways, but the conversation continues to evolve almost every day. Thus, the ways in which social workers track and respond is ongoing, including the new mental, physical, and emotional obstacles that arise. And I have to say, I feel very sorry for anyone especially this year, in these few years that we've had, if you are LGBTQ, you've been attacked probably, and I don't mean physically attacked, but, you know, maybe made fun of or attacked other people
mm-hmm.
because of the Republican Party. And that's,
mm-hmm.
that's plain and simple. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, but that's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I am a true believer that people do not choose to be a lesbian or to be, you know, gay. They don't choose to be that. I have a nephew. This came out you know, it took him, you know, 20-some years to do it, but he finally did it. And it was a very hard, difficult choice for him, you know, to come out because of his family. And, I mean, I was okay with it. I didn't have a problem at all. But I'm just saying the stigma is there for these people, and there are many judgmental people in this and they carry a lot of hate and stigma with them.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is, with this LGBTQ community thing, it's about love. It's about respect. And just because somebody don't share your worldview, you know, in terms of religion and how you would live your life and everything, you know, just like a caller three shows ago, Minnesota Mike, he's a Christian. Yeah, he can respect that and everything. But again, I sound like a stuck record. If you're a Christian or any other religion, you know, don't force people to hold your worldviews, you know, and believe in the same God or whatever, because we're all different and nobody chooses to be gay or lesbian or transgender. That's just how the way it is, you know. And, you know, if you believe in God, God talk about having compassion, you know, having, you know, respect for people as human beings, you know. Judge not, ye be judged, whatever the Bible saying say, you know. And these Christians, these evangelicals, born-again Christians, they're the worst of the lot, you know, because some of these people literally want to murder LGBTQ community people. And we can't have that in America. Such hate don't belong in America. This is the 21st century and not 1920s, you know. It wasn't acceptable back then, as it is not acceptable now. Love is love. Respect that. If you don't have gay sex, don't have gay sex. Simple as that. What two grown adults do in the bedroom is their business. And this other thing about, you know, in California and Washington State, where kids can make a decision of being transgender surgery from being a girl to a boy, or a boy turning into a girl. Across the United States, there are laws in the book saying that a person has to go through a rigorous psychological test for years, called a psychologist, and when they're 18, they finally can make that decision on their own because they're grown adults. And who is anybody, whether you're Christian or atheist, say, hey, that's not right because God said, or it is wrong, it's morally wrong. Mind your business. Stay in your lane. You know?
It's very
nobody.
Sorry. They shouldn't be playing God. Nobody told them to play God. When you're talking about two people's relationship, there are people getting killed in the world and all kinds of things. And two people, that doesn't affect anyone else's life, except they may be uncomfortable and they may not like it. And it's not right that they should say, I don't want to have them breathe the same air I do. That isn't right.
Yep.
That's actually how they think. One of the things, I don't know if anybody notices it, but the transgender thing, they were the back transgender background things. They were just using the women and the children. They don't, of course, the same people that are, most of the same people that are staunch against the transgenders going to the bathroom, they're talking about them, the women and the children. Most of them are against children's rights and women's rights. They're just using them to go against LGBTQ people, which I thought, to me, if you're going to use children and women to do that, but you're not going to defend their actual rights when it's actually about child abuse or actually domestic violence. And it's actually about putting, and you get advice from someone that tells you to put a man before your child. So that's disgusting. And anybody that puts a man before their child or either just supports like beating kids the way they bruise, those people, or even support putting a husband before their child when it comes to beating a child, they can't really use the safety of the women and the children. They can't really do that because they're not willing to defend actual child rights or women's rights when it comes to actually something that actually helps somebody else. So I'm really disgusted because, like my mom said, you protect your children. You put your children first. And she was saying, and a lot of the people that are doing these campaigns or anything like that or supporting these campaigns and not putting their kids first when it comes to child mm-hmm. abuse, and they're not putting like their the women's rights up. They're just trying to use them to go against the transgender community, which, and this is the same thing with the gay community. They mm-hmm. once they're done with going against the LGBTQ community, they're done with the women and the children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what my mom said. No person mm-hmm. puts their husband or their wife before their kid.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
My mom said that's what you don't do if you really care for mm-hmm. your child.
Of course.
Right. Right. You should put them first in everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but it's like if you're gonna do that, don't pretend. Don't pretend to care about your woman or your women and their children if you don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that mm-hmm. kind of pisses me off when they pretend to care about the women and the children as far as gays and lesbians and transgenders. Because like I said, mm-hmm. I tell mm-hmm. them when I find out who they are, like, hey, Coach Dave Dobenmeyer. He doesn't mm-hmm. believe in any woman's rights, but he wants to use mm-hmm. the women and the children to go against the transgender bathroom, which that kind of
right.
that kind, it made me angry.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to ask everybody, Laura, starting with you. So you have a mm-hmm. transgender. She's in sports, like, for example, swimming. I don't remember the names of the participants, but there is mm-hmm. this guy, turn a girl. Still have a penis, but competing in women's sports, using the same locker room and everything. But
mm-hmm.
she identifies as transgender. And they start mm-hmm. taking the hormone pills or the estrogen pills and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, mm-hmm. because this is a lot of, saying, whether both, if you're left or right, that, hey, you still have the male gene and men are stronger than women in certain
mm-hmm.
things and everything. So, mm-hmm. you know, since this transgender female still has a penis and still have some hormones in them that are men, you know, is it right to have transgender sports? Is that an unfair advantage? What's all your thoughts on that, starting with Lori?
Tough one, David, because I have thought about that. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, in swimming, you might be right because
mm-hmm.
it does take a lot of strength. You know, to swim, especially competition, and
mm-hmm.
you know, it might make a difference. But it's such a fine line to try to, you know, cross. That's a tough one, you know, because
mm-hmm.
you might
mm-hmm.
have a transgender male, you know, that's turning into
mm-hmm.
a female that's very tiny, you know, tiny, and it, you know, wanting to swim, and then
mm-hmm.
you know. That young man turning into a woman may not be as strong as the other one. It's kind of hard. It's a real, I don't know, that's a tough
mm-hmm.
one. You know, like, what other sport can we think about? Tennis, I don't know if it would make a big difference in tennis. I don't know if it would. In golf, I don't think it would make a great difference in golf.
Mm-hmm.
Football, yes. I do because of, you know, from a girl to a man, but I don't think they would do football. Yeah, I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's a fine line. It's hard to figure out. It's
mm-hmm.
a tough one.
Okay, how about the solution? If you're a transgender, have a section in sports for only transgender people. You know, would that solve a lot of problems?
Yeah, it would solve a lot of problems if they made it, you know, equal. You know, all three to compete, but I don't know if that would ever work. But it would
mm-hmm.
make it easier. It would definitely
mm-hmm.
make it easier. You know,
mm-hmm.
maybe if transgenders, you know, competed against each other, maybe that
mm-hmm.
would make it equal, more equal.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a tough thing. I wouldn't want to be the one to try to figure that out. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Absolutely wouldn't.
Okay. Anybody else have anything before we move on?
I've got something to say on that. David,
mm-hmm.
you're familiar with soccer, right? You like
yeah,
soccer
yeah.
very, very much.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm familiar with football. Look at
mm-hmm.
both of those teams. You have extremely strong, fast, agile men on football and on soccer, and you also have some very skinny, delicate men on football and soccer. So what the hell are we talking about? It's what the genes you're born with. It doesn't matter whether you're transgendering or not.
I don't know.
The football team has got I'll compare it to football because I understand football. I've been watching the football games because that's all there's been on TV lately besides the news. And I'm looking at these guys, and there are certain positions that they play because they're big, brawny, strong, and they, they can tackle. And then when they're on the offensive, they're running, they got the little skinny guys who are fast and quick. So what the hell are we arguing about?
Right.
I mean, I can't see an argument in it. Some of them are going to be big and brawny, and some are going to be little, as Lori said, little and tiny.
That's what I'm saying. So it's.
And I mean, should we take and dissect these guys on the soccer team and the football team?
Yeah.
Is that what it's coming to?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It would be something that's a fact.
Is that what it's coming to? Are we going to undress the guys on the football and the soccer team to see if they all have penises?
Yeah, that's it. I'm crazy in this world.
Well,
I mean, you know, I mean, the Republicans talk about less government. Well, why in the hell do they want to continuously be in everybody's bedroom and bathroom?
Yeah, they're sick.
Yeah.
They're
obsessed. They're obsessed with gay sex and LGBT.
That's my take on it.
I wanted to say something about transgender. I didn't know much about them until I ended up with seven patients that were transgender, and I learned a lot about it. And one of the things that I come to see, the first one that I got, the man had sent out, he was a Vietnam veteran, he had pox face and lost a lot of hair, but he identified, you know, he didn't feel comfortable in that situation of being a man with that. And he ultimately went through surgery and changed, and he's not a beautiful girl, but he is happier than hell. She, I should say. But when he first sent out letters to all the doctors in Flint, I felt so sorry for him because I got this letter saying, you know, basically I'm this and would you be willing to take care of me? Not about his problem. You go to a specialist that does all that, but just would you take me as a patient and you're not discussing with me basically. And I felt so sorry for him. I thought, oh my God, he looked at all the doctors and some of them are probably, you know, whatever. And I called him up and he became a patient. And all I did is take care of him for his regular stuff. He saw surgeons. He saw endocrinologists for his other issues. But I did see him go through the process and actually have amputation of his genitals, and that was a happier person. So, I mean, I had that experience as a doctor working with people that I didn't know that much about. And the other thing about trans people and trans, you know, you've got this thing that kind of confuses people, trans, binary, both, I go either way, whatever. That kind of confuses people, which is maybe part of the problem. They don't get some understanding. But if they want to make them go in the bed in the bathroom of the gender they are, I don't know how the women would feel about a bearded person, you know, a person coming in who looks like the other sex in their bathroom because they got the right genitals. I mean, you know what I mean? That wouldn't go over real well either. So I just think there's a, rather than trying to understand from a human point how best for a human being to live without making their life miserable, because they've probably gone through hell already having to deal with it. But I see this bias and anger and wanting to hurt them. You know, they'll even kill them, particularly black women, trans. That's the problem. That the problem is the hatred toward them rather than just learning to look at them as human beings. And that's the problem with a lot of so-called Christians. When you talk about the evangelicals, I just say the self-described Christians, because that's what they call themselves. But They don't make me think of Jesus or anything along that line. And they're the ones that are big on Trump. But they have biases and bigotry, and so I guess they hide behind Christianity. What a great one to hide behind. They say they're hiding behind Jesus.
That's true. Very true.
I'm going to share a true story. This is many, many years ago. We were at a public place downtown, and us girls, you know, girls go to the bathroom together. Us girls went to the bathroom. We had a couple younger teenagers with us. I and another adult woman happened to turn around, and we noticed that this very, very high heels were facing the toilet. You could you could see under the thing. We looked at one another, and we kind of giggled. We didn't say a word. The person in the stall knew we were there. And we did what we were in there to do. We washed our hands, and we left. That person that was in there was no threat to us because he or they stayed in that stall until we left the bathroom.
That's good.
I mean, it's no big deal. At least it's not to me. I don't know what the damn big deal is. And then I've gone to places lately that the bathrooms have that international sign on it. And you're allowed to go in one at a time. So then I really don't know who is cross-dressed or not. And it's really none of my business. You know, you don't have to go down the hall now to find a men's room or a ladies' room. The in a lot of doctors' offices now, it's the sign on the door is I can't even picture it, but
men and women that can use a unisex bathroom basically.
Yeah, unisex. That's what I'm
there
trying to
go.
Think of.
There you go.
And,
Go ahead.
Oh, so, you know, that's my answer to that.
Yeah,
I really thank
the
gal that's called from Flint. She has really explained a lot. I have learned a lot from her. Thank you for calling.
We'll have under 27 minutes left, so I will move on quickly through this list and everything. Next thing on the list is healthcare, and there's a number of challenges when it comes on to receiving quality healthcare, especially in the United States. And despite the passage of the Affordable Care Act in 2010, or Obamacare, gaps in coverage remain. This made abundantly clear with a lack of mental health resources. The United States depends more on healthcare for individuals than any other country. But the increase in expenditure has not translated in higher healthcare system performance. So on one high-level contemporary social issue is abortion. Two shows down the road, we're going to talk about women's rights and abortion. And after the Supreme Court reversed Roe versus Wade with its Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization ruling in 2022, state governments and local and federal courts have been in contentious back and forth. And this has left many women with inadequate resources and care for contraceptives, menstruation, pregnancy, miscarriage, and other reproductive health issues. So social work and healthcare are intricately tied together. Social workers offer support to individuals, groups, and entire communities. So it matters whether one person is struggling or an entire community. One way that social workers can offer aid is by connecting clients to healthcare organizations and provide aid that fit their needs. So, you know, it's a war against women, basically, by the Republicans and the Supreme Court when it overturned Roe versus Wade. You know, and quickly, Lori, you know, what's your take on it? Do you think it will be reinstated one day?
Oh, it has to. This particular case, I think you know I'm going to talk about it. The lady, the young lady in Texas, I believe she's 32 years old. She's a mom already of two. She is pregnant. She's about 20 weeks pregnant. And they said that she went to her doctor and there is something wrong with the baby. Now, in terms, I don't know exactly what's wrong with the baby, but they did say that this baby, even if this baby comes to terms, it will only live a day or so afterwards, and or mm-hmm. the mother could be in danger and get very sick from the pregnancy mm-hmm. and maybe never have mm-hmm. any children. So she went to, she got a lawyer because in Texas, you know, you can't have an abortion after 20 weeks. I believe that's the law. And also there's no, how do you put it, like if incest and all of that, that's all gone. Mm-hmm. So now she got a lawyer. She went to court on Thursday, and the mm-hmm. judge said that she could have the abortion. The mm-hmm. attorney general in Texas had a fit about it. He told mm-hmm. he basically said that the doctors have no right. They don't blah blah blah. So he took he took the case and he went to the Supreme Court in Texas late Friday mm-hmm. evening. They overturned it, so she cannot have the abortion now, and they're going to think about it. Now days are ticking for this young lady, for this mom. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? It was bad enough that she had to she got the news from her doctor that her baby is not going to live. It has some kind of a genetic, and I should read what it is, but I don't have it in front of me. But so that was probably hard enough for her to hear to begin with. And then second of all, not being able to have the abortion, and you know, and then third of all, if she doesn't have the abortion, the baby's not going to live anyway, and then her health could be in danger as well. She could mm-hmm. die, mm-hmm. is what they told her. Mm-hmm. And since when does a court decide that this woman can live or die? Because basically that's what they're doing. They're playing God right. with mm-hmm. her. I'm so mm-hmm. angry mm-hmm. about this. I have been so mad about this since last week. I can't get it out mm-hmm. of my head. I just cannot.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I wish there was something that I could do because I would do it. I mean, let's fly her to Michigan. But the problem is, if she flies to Michigan, has her abortion, when she goes back, they will arrest her.
Yeah.
That's what will happen. I don't know.
And the thing is, why are men in Texas so obsessed with abortion and everything? Because
I don't know.
I remember
I don't
a few occasions.
Control of women.
People used to work for Trump. They got their mistress pregnant, and I had no problem with them getting an abortion. Mm-hmm. You know, and one even spiked her smoothie with the abortion drug. And there was no ramifications or consequences for his actions. So, okay, everybody else should abide by the new Supreme Court ruling and the different states and their laws. Even in existential crisis, like, you know, somebody is raped by their father mm-hmm. or a family member, it's a serious thing. You know, they can't have an abortion. Which woman mm-hmm. or female in the right mind would want to have their rapist baby? Tell me. You know, these Republicans are so goddamn sickening. It's not funny. They don't even know how the abortion process goes. They don't know a woman's body. Like, the woman has a right to decide what she do with her body. It's between herself and her doctor. And if she believe in a deity, you know, that deity. So, you know, if she get off of this thing where we judge women because they have an abortion, it's none of your business. It's not anybody's business.
A form of control. Who are these mm-hmm. people on this court that think that they are so high and mighty that they can tell this woman what to do with her life? This is going to affect her life. It doesn't just affect her today. It's going to affect her whole life, one way or another.
Yeah. The people on these courts are appointed. These people are appointed by Governor Abbott, and these people are nominated by, are pushed through by people like Mitch McConnell, who went back on his word with the majority leader of the Senate, with Chuck Schumer. You know, so to an extent, it's Democrats' fault, because Democrats made a deal with this asshole from Kentucky.
Yeah.
And we'll have all these packed courts of conservatives, Christian conservatives. you know, trying to, like, based off the Bible, make laws to govern mm-hmm. America and different states. So we'll have to move on. We have 20 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Yes.
Going to say about yeah. that, ladies. After the judge said she could do that, and the attorney general Paxton said that if you do that, and they put up draconian penalties, if you're a doctor, you can be placed in prison for the rest of your life. This isn't just a little bit. This is draconian. They are sick, controlling, hiding behind religion, always. Looking on to other people, what's in their mind, like the woman who was on the school board in Florida and her husband, they had a threesome, which is no problem for me what they do.
Right.
But they're the ones that mm-hmm. want to ban books and are against gays. And here they are. They have a threesome. All it does is expose their hypocrisy and they're hiding
mm-hmm.
behind religion. And they're not at all anything
mm-hmm.
that looks like a devout person that just lives their life. They don't just wave a flag
right.
and say, look, here I am, which is what they do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, and you know, the sad part is that how many more women are like this story in Texas? How many more women are there in these red states that are in situations that they don't know what to do? It's horrible. There are other people. You know, all the states so far that have done it, even the conservative states, you know, like in Ohio and Kansas, they had a chance to vote on that, and at least this time in our time, they voted, put it in their constitution that they can do it. So far, every state that's done that, conservative or what, has preserved it in their own constitution, because they first started to say, you know, the Republicans, the conservatives, we're states. We want to go to the states so the states can do it. But ultimately, they wanted to have a national law. Ultimately, that's what they really wanted. So they start out with
mm-hmm.
the states. But the point is,
mm-hmm.
the states have been voting for to have it in their constitution. So I think the dog caught the car, and they don't know what to do with it, and it's going to be a
mm-hmm.
problem for them. I don't know if Texas would try to, you know, vote on that for their constitution, but a lot of Republicans and conservatives, women and men, may vote for it to go in the constitution, and that should be the end of that for that. But that's just part of the way if they did that.
Mm-hmm.
The other states did vote to, keep, to put it in their constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So there's they're going against the will of the people.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in the meantime, this woman is in real deep trouble because of the fact she has had C-sections.
Yep.
And this
yep.
has complicated
mm-hmm.
the issue, the medical
mm-hmm.
issue.
Mm-hmm.
The point is,
yes.
she could go to a state, but she doesn't want to do that. She wants to confront it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
okay, we'll have to move on. We'll have limited time. We'll have 15 minutes left and everything. So the next thing that's a hot button issue in 2023, that way math in 2024, is a refugee crisis with massive crisis in Ukraine, Russia, Haiti, and numerous other countries. The human causes are felt deeply around the world. And according to the United Nations, forced displacement totaling 103 million people globally in mid-2022, an increase from 89.3 million at the end of 2021. And now we'll have the war with Israel versus Gaza, much more dislocation of people. And it's rising dramatically in 2023. It's going to be a problem in 2024 because everybody wants to come to America, start a new life, you know, and bringing the number of people in need to 339 million as of date. So more than the population in the United States. And not everybody can come to America, obviously. So that means one in every 23 people on the planet will need emergency assistance just to survive. So do you think the United States doing enough to help refugees? And we notice that Germany, Italy, and other countries in Europe are closing the borders now because it's straining their economy. You know,
mm-hmm.
how do we try to even attempt to solve this refugee crisis problem?
There's one issue that a lot of people come here to work, really. If you really
mm-hmm.
look at the, it doesn't matter, but if you looked at the criminality and what they do for their percentage of the population, they're much less dangerous than Americans, mainly white nationalist, conservative American men in particular. They're more dangerous,
mm-hmm.
and the FBI has even said that's the most critical danger to our country is the internal, but
mm-hmm.
it's that group. So even though I know that's true, a lot of them don't think about that. So I don't see them as, oh, they're more dangerous. If they replace them, we'd have less danger because they don't commit as many crimes. They're coming here to work mainly. But if they do come here, and as I understood, that Trump stopped them from being able to reach the border where they have a right under our laws to apply. Doesn't mean they're going to get it, but they have the right to apply. So he tried to block them from getting there. That was another unkind, inhumane thing that he did. But when they come, they seem to be very willing to work. And then there's there are laws about how long they have to wait to work. And the sooner they could work, the more they're actually able to do something. That is one of the things I see, that they can't work, and they're willing to work. So that's just one aspect of it. To have a law, you can't work.
Well, look what DeSantis did in Florida. You know, all the migrants that were down there, you know, working, picking all the fruits are all gone.
Right.
And everything
and their fruits
is
couldn't get
rotting off, you know, and they couldn't get anyone to work. That's what a genius this is. He's such a genius.
Americans, you know, one story that I read about this, this American, he was going to work, and after one day, he doesn't want to do it. So it's not like you're taking anybody's job, because when they're gone, no one else is going to do that job.
Nobody wants to do that job. Are you kidding? No.
And we know that. So when they're saying they're taking a job, they're taking a job that's unfilled and everybody wants because they want their fruits and vegetables. That's right.
And
you
know, final thing on this topic is that these displaced population faces the challenges of accessing education, healthcare, job opportunities, and other resources. And a lie that the right wing keep telling is that, oh, you know, why should they suck off the teeth of government where they don't pay any taxes, they don't pay any social security and what have you, but illegal immigrants, so to speak, don't get none of these benefits. So, you know, it's just hate-mongering and fearing people that come from outside who not like you and everything. And the Republicans and their supporters need to stop this. So our next thing is the wealth gap. Between 1990 and 2020, the U.S. billionaire wealth soared 1,130% in 2020. And that is more than 200 times greater than the 5.37% growth of the United States median wealth over the same period of time. So the minimum wage is $7.25 for the past umpteenth year or no. And, you know, these corporations saying, oh, you know, why should I pay somebody, you know, $15 an hour to flip burgers? In Europe, in certain places in Europe, it's $23 starting out minimum wage and up, you know. So it's very cruel by these corporations and rich individuals who, first of all, pay little or no taxes, don't want to raise the minimum wage because we're in inflation now. And the only way to beat inflation is, you know, hiring more people instead of outsourcing jobs and paying them a livable wage. That's nonsense what they're preaching.
Absolutely. It's always backwards.
Next one, Laurie.
The next one is gun violence. Many medical professionals consider gun violence to be a public health crisis, but its impact can be felt across health and human service fields, from homicides to mass shootings to suicides. Gun violence is a particularly troubling problem in the United States, where homicides tied to firearms is the highest among developed nations. And we know that. It is out of control in this country. Guns are out of control in this country. We need, you know, I don't even know if the red flag laws go far enough. We need some real tight legislation. I think we need to get rid of the AR-15s off the market and any kind of military-style weapon. Background checks have to be deeper. I think there should be a waiting period when you go in to buy a gun. You have to wait maybe a week, go back in a week. They can do all the checks on you that need to be done. Maybe that would curtail some of the mass shootings that we've been having. I don't know. I'm just saying. This is a big issue. But the Republicans, we know the NRA has them in their pockets. So it's a constant. So we need to have a majority in the House and in the Senate and the White House so we can get some work done. Just like here in Michigan, we have all Democrats running the state right now, and there is so much going on and so many things that are getting done. because of that reason. All good things in this state.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what we need for the country. The same type of gun legislation and for health care,
mm-hmm.
for everything. We need we need Democrats bad, real bad.
Yeah. Well, and if you want to go into a
if you want to go to
a supermarket shop and you have to carry a gun, that's just a penis extension, you know,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
you suffer from inferiority complex. So leave the gun
mm-hmm.
at home when you go in Starbucks or whatever, and it's not necessary. You know, while you're showing
mm-hmm.
that you're a big man because you have this AR-15 or AK-47, grow up. You know, stop playing
yep.
G.I. Joe. If you want to serve in the armed forces and you want to shoot
mm-hmm.
guns that much, join the armed forces. You know, be a man. Stop
yep.
being like a bitch by carrying
yep.
these weapons in public places because people don't like it. And it instills fear and panic, especially, you know, like how we have a rash of school shootings and different shootings. And absolutely and then nowhere
mm-hmm.
in the United States is safe from gun violence. But you're going to say something.
Nope. I was going to say something. Mm-hmm. One of the things we did have a 10-year absence of those guns, and it was Biden was involved in that rule, and it was
mm-hmm.
for 10 years,
mm-hmm.
why they said it for 10 years. And there's no question,
mm-hmm.
the number of deaths went down. It went down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know
mm-hmm.
that it does. And when they say it doesn't stop all of them, well, that's no argument. Nothing does. That's not
mm-hmm.
the argument.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be 100%
mm-hmm.
perfect. So whenever they get into perfection, I say we're never dealing with perfection. If your chance of
mm-hmm.
your child dropping off a cliff is 1 in 2%, you're going to not want them to do that. If it's 1 in 100 million, you might think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a difference. It's all about risk. And the guns,
yeah.
when they there was a Supreme Court justice, an older one that's not in there now, who was saying that interpretation of that amendment was like anything. I mean, could I have I want a little nuclear bomb because I just want to do it and carry it around. That there's,
mm-hmm.
They had a musket. What they had is a musket when they made that, the law. It's a musket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so
exactly.
I can develop bombs. Why don't I just, you know, you have to draw the line, and I haven't seen anybody fight that. Number three is that when you look at all the deaths that occurred because of those guns and the fact
mm-hmm.
that if you took them away, some people will get killed is, again, not an argument because it's going to be very
mm-hmm.
different. So when they start
mm-hmm.
to do that, I take up my time. But the thing is, if you look at what horrible thing happened to those people who didn't have those guns compared to what happened to all the people that died. And I think you got to think
mm-hmm.
about that because you're not going to
mm-hmm.
get a lot of background checks on a lot of people they don't even know about. It ain't never going to happen. So it's like
mm-hmm.
until you can do that, which I still don't even think they even need to carry those kind of guns, what horrible thing happened to those people when a lot of these other people didn't die during that 10-year period. You do make judgments
mm-hmm.
on things about risk, and I think that's one of them they could start to argue on that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you know what?
And
it's not just the AR-15s. In March of 2021, 172 Republicans voted against the renewing the Violence Against Women's Act.
Oh,
the reason... The reason is that the abuser would have to relinquish their firearm.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, their pistol. And in Michigan, we have had a rise
mm-hmm.
in that type of killings
mm-hmm.
in the last couple months.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the women who vote Republican need their heads examined.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
true.
Indeed.
Now, this
exactly.
is March of 2021. 172
yeah.
Republicans voted against
mm-hmm.
renewing the Violence Against Women's Act. And the reason
wow.
for it is the abuser would have to relinquish their firearm.
That's awful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the very
yeah.
last one. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Laura, with the last one. I'm trying to, get certain things queued up.
Okay. Hunger and food insecurity. We all have likely felt the discomfort of hunger, even worse, the lack of energy, mental function, and physical pains it creates. According to Feeding America, 34 million regularly face hunger in the United States, and 38 million live in poverty. In 2021, 193 million globally were in need of urgent food assistance. To put that number into perspective, If that population were a country, it would be the eighth largest in the world. At current rates, 574 million people will be living in poverty by 2030, nearly 7% of the world's population, with most concentrated in Africa. Despite tens of thousands of private, nonprofit, and government agencies, food insecurity remains a stubborn issue to solve. And as with many other social issues in America, its roots are tied to several others on this list. And that's true. Hunger and food insecurity is a terrible thing. I wish that there were more ways that we could help people so that they could eat. I think I see a lot of it going on. And I wanted to just mention this, which made me happy today. Taylor Swift, in every single city that she has a concert in, she donates to food banks. And those food banks can feed 500,000 people for a month. Think about that for a second. So if these billionaires, you know, and these rich corporations, if they would have her mindset, we could cure hunger and food insecurity in this country. We could do it in a week. Really could.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
There's no question.
Okay, so
and
that's
you know
has to be the final word. Go ahead with the final word.
I was going to say God's situation is, in terms of food and water, has gone from catastrophic to apocalyptic, according to non-Hamas, non-Palestinian, foreign doctors, medical workers, NGOs who are in there and on the ground. They don't see the need for that, and they don't go along with what Netanyahu is saying, that they're doing everything they can to prevent it. These are people that are working to help them, and they say it's at apocalyptic right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, that has to be the last word. We thank Elaine and Dora and Khalil for calling in, and that gentleman from North Michigan. We thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again Thursday. No, tomorrow night. What am I talking about? Tomorrow night, same time, same place. Check us out at kitchenpolitics123.com. And also a Facebook page and a community page. A community page is booming right now. So until tomorrow night, we hope you can call in. Same time, same place for Kitchen Politics 123. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Lori.
David, and I'm Lori Pickup from Michigan. Elaine and Doris, thank you for calling in. And Khalil,
thank you.
Everyone have a good night. We'll be here tomorrow evening. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you.